Sure, you have 15 minutes. Is there any amount of time you wish to reserve for rebuttal?
2 minutes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you. You may begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning and happy Halloween. Mr. Goodman and I promise you no tricks and only treats. My name is Bruce Billman. I represent Mickey Rhodes in her claim for disability benefits under the Virginia Retirement System. I'll dispense with the procedural history and the facts in this case, except as they may come into play in the arguments in chief. I also defer any comment on the board's finding that Ms. Rhodes had a pre-existing condition that would have otherwise disqualified you. My understanding is that Mr. Goodman would also agree that that is not an appropriate finding. Of course, Judge Taylor found that was an abuse of discretion below. So we'll turn to the first issue before this court, and that has to do with Ms. Rhodes' ability to perform her job. As the court knows, one of the requirements here for entitlement is that she must have been, quote, continuously since the effective date of retirement, mentally or physically incapacitated for the further performance of her duty.
Counsel, let me stop you.
Yes.
And get to the crux of that issue.
Yes.
It's my understanding that she was terminated in April. Is that correct?
I believe that's correct, yes.
If the treating medical staff that was treating Ms. Rhodes indicates that her disability was of June of that year, how does that impact your argument about the continuing effects or being not able to work because of a medical condition?
Not at all, Your Honor. I think it's just a fact of life that people go to the doctor after the fact. So when she was going to Dr. Sturgis after she was terminated, this was in relation to the medical conditions that she had been experiencing all along, and it was only at that point that Dr. Sturgis really was on notice that this was an issue that he needed to comment on.
Except for she was terminated for non-physical reasons. It was for professionalism issues, for essentially not being able to do her job as the town saw it.
Correct. Okay. In fact, the informal fact finder made a comment that she was terminated by the town of Rock Hill for disorganization, lack of professional image in public meetings, poor preparation, failure to forward emails, and lack of responsibility. In short, the case record documents inadequate performance. That's at 239 of the appendix. Well, isn't that what happens when we get sick? Is that our job performance falls off?
But aren't there other reasons for job performance falling off, and isn't it something else that the Board of Medicine could have considered?
They could have if they'd been able to point to some evidence that suggested that it wasn't a medical condition that was affecting her job performance. This is in direct contravention of what Dr. Sturgis said.
But is there any impact, though, that Dr. Sturgis doesn't indicate her date of disability from the date of termination? There's a gap, too. What are we as a court supposed to do with that in terms of the substantial evidence portion of it?
Well, if there is a gap, it's only because, as I said, she went to the doctor after she was terminated, and this issue was then first addressed.
Right, but the doctor could have indicated the disability from the point of termination, and that was not what we have in the record.
But what the record does have is that Ms. Rhodes had been suffering with this condition since prior to or during her employment with the town of Round Hill.
Right, but doesn't it have to be an inability to perform due to the incapacity at the time of termination or retirement?
Yes. And Ms. Rhodes testified at the informal fact-finding that the whole reason that these job performance issues came up was because of the pain that she was experiencing, pain that Dr. Sturgis and other doctors certified was the result of the medical condition she had at the time. This is not a case where you have an employee who by herself is saying, I can't do this job. It's not a case where you have an employee and her doctor who are saying, I cannot do this job. You have as well even the employer affirmatively says that she is not performing the job. And one of the things that occurs to me, Your Honor, is that in terms of the professionalism, complaint of professionalism, well, part of the reason for the professionalism complaint was that she was, was spitting as she was speaking. And this was all affected by the paralysis on the side of her face. So it's part of the problem. And the point here to be made is that the only people that seem to disagree with her inability to do her job, which is one of the requirements, the only people or the only entity to disagree is somebody who never saw the demands of the job, never saw the actual job being performed, never evaluated the person's performance in person, and had never even medically examined the person.
But isn't part of the medical board's duties to be more of an objective body to look at the record and to make a determination?
Absolutely. The board is given a great deal of deference for good reason, but it's Ms. Rhodes' position that in order for the board to earn that deference, they have to have evidence to support their rationale.
Is there any issue, though, with the fact that even though there may be viable or credible evidence put on by Ms. Rhodes that she was disabled, if there's counter evidence that's equally as believable, that the board would have erred in believing that?
If that evidence is in the file, the board never pointed to it at all. They simply concluded in a very summary fashion in the decision that they issued that she was capable of performing her job and that it was not likely to be permanent. But they never pointed to any evidence that suggested that she could do the job. And again, we have the employer saying she can't. I think that most of my work is actually in the Social Security arena. And there is case law on that side of the world that says that if all you have is a non-examining source as your basis for denying something in contravention of examining doctors and any other evidence, in other words, the non-examining source alone cannot be substantial evidence to deny a claim. Now, if the non-examining source can at least proffer some sort of evidence or point to some sort of evidence to support their conclusion that she couldn't do her job, then maybe.
Is there any issue then with that? Because what the board does point to are a couple of different things in terms of where she indicates she can't concentrate or focus.
Correct.
And they indicate there's no neurological test, which would be an objective testing.
Right.
Is that not something that they could use to support their position?
They could if it was true. But I pointed out in the brief that there are these various neurological findings that were made both by Dr. Sturgis and the doctor in Ohio, where she subsequently moved, that validated and verified that she indeed was having this particularly painful condition called Ramsey-Hunt. So,
but nobody's questioning whether she has the Ramsey-Hunt.
Correct. And it all comes down to her statement at the informal fact-finding hearing, I couldn't do my job because I was in too much pain to do it well. And there is a clear connection between all of the evidence that goes directly to her statement. I want to turn to the question of the condition likely to be permanent for just a moment. In my mind, the statement that something is likely to be permanent is the same thing as saying it's not going to get functionally better. And there is no evidence in this file that says that she is going to get functionally better. There is none.
Can I ask you on that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Because Dr. Sturgis, on that form that he filled out for VRS, he checked the yes box under the statement, to a reasonable degree of medical probability is Ms. Rhodes' condition expected to improve in the future. He did check yes.
Correct.
And of course, he made other comments, too, that he thought she was essentially unemployable because of the condition and so forth. But how do you answer that, given that, of course, on appeal, given the standard of review that we have?
Easily, Your Honor. There is a difference between a medical condition getting better and somebody functionally getting better. The pain was not going to get better. And I believe that was what Dr. Sturgis was trying to say when he then went further and said, I don't believe that she's employable. Or in a way, he is just certifying that when she tells you she feels as bad as she says she does, that we should believe her. But I think that is not the same thing as saying she's going to regain the ability to do her job. The best the board could ever do was point to a statement that she responded well to a course of steroids. That was the only place I could find in the record where there was some indication that she was getting better. But, as I think we all know, you can't stay on steroids forever. And she may have responded once, but you can't keep doing that. And that points to the fact that this all is likely to be permanent.
Can I ask you about her employment with the city of Manassas? And were there any issues when she was let go there? I know that was, you know, the grant ran out, but were there issues in performance before she left there? Were they all only before when she was employed by Roundhill?
I'm not aware of any issues at the city of Manassas. Again, the reason wasn't medical when she left. And frankly, I don't recall the reason. Well, other than she lost her job or lost her employment, as to how or why she signed on with Round Hill. But one would think that if she was going to sign on at Round Hill, she must have thought at that point she could do the job. It was only then that the Ramsey Hunt started to spiral down.
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time. If you wish to continue, you certainly may. But.
I will reserve my rebuttal time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes. Mr. Goodman.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Brian Goodman on behalf of the Virginia Retirement System. May it please the court, as I outlined in my brief, the standard review for this court is conducting a de novo review of the circuit court's application of the substantial evidence standard. And as Mr. Billman pointed out, I completely concede that issue on the pre-existing condition. Please lay that at my feet as the officer of the court who represents Virginia Retirement System. That should not have been in the opinion, and it was, and I apologize for the inconvenience of the analysis for that. The other two elements, though, we are here to urge the court to uphold the circuit court's decision that the VRS case decision is supported by substantial evidence. As we go into their into the opinion itself, the analysis starts on 268 through 269. The court analyzed our finding that that Ms. Rhodes was not incapacitated for the further performance of duty. And under their analysis, they agreed also with VRS that there was substantial evidence to support that. In relation to permanency, She went through this again. Judge Taylor went through that again, analyzed the evidence, took the agency record as a whole, and came to the conclusion that there was substantial evidence supporting the VRS decision. She did properly overrule us on the pre-existing condition, as I've noted. And I will emphasize also in here that under the recent Blair case, the medical board reports and the independent fact finder's recommendations are substantial evidence in the record on which we can rely to arrive at a case decision.
Counsel, do you want to address, though, the argument that there was error in reference to finding that she was not incapacitated, that there were things in the record to note or support the neurological issues? I think that's one of the questions that's been raised.
Well, and I think the point there, Your Honor, is that there's no reweighing of the evidence in there. So if there is evidence of a neurological condition that may or may not have caused the incapacity, if there is evidence in the record that supports that she was not incapacitated, then this court, under the substantial evidence standard, would uphold our case decision. I would point out in there, though, that I think chicken or egg is a bad analogy, but it's that, well, she couldn't do the job because of the condition, or was the condition the cause of the incapacity? I'll point the court to page 25 in the appendix, where in June of 2014, after Ms. Rhodes left, the employer fills out information regarding the disability application. And question number 3, is the employee performing all of the duties listed on the job description? The employer checks yes. Question 5 is, what if any changes or modifications? It looks like about 90 days into her employment, she asked to be able to telework one day a week, which the employer accommodated. And then finally, the pertinent question also is number 7, how has the employee's illness affected his or her job performance during the past year of active employment? And they respond NA. So I think in there, to make the argument that while the employer knew she couldn't do the job, I think the employer knew that she wasn't doing the job. And that makes this a very close case, and that's why we're here.
But respectfully, isn't the question of whether she's able to do the job medically or not something that the employer is necessarily in a position to do, but would have to be done by some type of medical staff?
Well, I think under this, Your Honor, the employer was saying she was performing all the duties of her job. Okay. With that, if there are no other questions, we're here urging the court to
I'm looking at that report. Form that you just noted to the court. So that would have been the last, given that's dated June 16th, 2014, so that would have been the last point in which that would have been relevant for her?
Yeah.
Just looking at the
Well, her
timeline.
Last day was April of 2014,
right.
And this form here is part of the disability retirement
right.
application process.
It should encompass her entire time there, then, and their
yes.
assessment of her performance and ability and illness at that point.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank
so,
you,
again,
sir.
We leave and urge you to uphold the circuit court's upholding of the VRS final case decision as resting on substantial evidence.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. Mr. Grillman.
Thank you, Your Honor. 2 very quick points. First, with regard to the permanency, the reasons proffered by the Virginia retirement system are all phrased in using the word may. May provide significant improvement with regard to treatment. Limitations may still be corrected. She may be able to perform her job. These sound like concessions to me. They don't sound like determinations that this is not likely to be permanent. It sounds like exactly the opposite to me. Finally, I want to touch on the question of deference very, very quickly. There are really 3 forces at play here. We have an administrative agency who oversees a program which by design must deliver benefits and relief to those who qualify as quickly as humanly possible. That's their job. We have a legal standard that in many instances and by definition needs a lot of time to determine if the standard can be met. And then we have a healthcare system which moves slowly, if at all, for any number of systemic reasons. Medicine's an art, it's not a science, and it doesn't always move in the correct direction or in a straight line. And all of those forces really kind of work at cross purposes with respect to a claimant for disability benefits under the system. In Ms. Rhodes' situation, where she has a rather unique kind of illness, it's hard to define that in such a short period of time. And one of the things we're asking this court to do is take into account how much deference you can really give a system that does not give a claimant the time they may need to meet that standard. And that should be taken into account in the likely to be permanent part of the equation.
Thank
For those reasons, we'd ask you to overturn the system's determination.
Thank you.